You're listening to Stop Feeding the Predators on City of Angels Recovery Radio. My name is Lynn, and I am the founder of Stop Feeding the Predators. We are a nonprofit organization that helps people that have been sexually assaulted when they were children to find their healing. And today, I have a friend with me. And Shelley, thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
And I know that you listened to a couple of radio shows from Stop Feeding the Predators and kind of made a quick decision that you'd be willing to talk with me for one of the shows. What made you decide to do a radio show tonight?
Well, because I was abused as a child, and it took me a long time to begin recovery. Once I discovered Stop Feeding the Predators and started coming to meetings, it's helped me greatly. And I would like to reach out to anybody who has been through the same situations that I've been in and encourage them to start their healing process like I have. It's really changed my life. And if somebody's listening who needs help and they're encouraged by me speaking out, then I really want them to come and start coming to our meetings.
Okay. And for people that are listening that are in other states or even other countries, since this is internet radio, people can be listening anywhere, I would encourage people to listen to the shows, and you are welcome to contact me. Again, my name's Lynn. You're welcome to contact me through private messages through Facebook, if you'd like. You can send an email. Pretty much Facebook or phone calls are the easiest ways, because I'm always carrying the phone and I'm always answering somebody's question on Facebook, so those get the most attention. So you can call 614-403-4545. And it doesn't matter where you're located. If you can make that phone call and it will ring through to me, you're welcome to call. Facebook messages the same way. You can send a private message on Facebook. Just go to Facebook and type in Stop Feeding the Predators, P-R-E-D-A-T-O-R-S. And, of course, City of Angels Recovery Radio will have links posted with each show. Shelley, when you and I were talking about doing a radio show, mostly I needed to make a recording before Thanksgiving, and you said that you'd help me out, and we talked a little bit about different topics, and we covered a wide range of things that we could discuss on the radio program. And City of Angels Recovery Radio helps a lot of people who have addiction issues. And you agreed that that would be something that we could talk about. And again, for people listening, we do not share graphic details of sexual assaults because we don't feed the predators. We're not going to talk about graphic sexual descriptions that somebody else can appreciate in a way that we would not. But you and I've talked, Shelley, and you said that some things were happening in your life, and again, no graphic details, some things were happening in your life, and you were looking for different ways to cope with things that were happening. So you can either share, again, no graphic details, you can share some of the things that were happening, approximate ages, or you can just start talking about ways that you were looking to cope, whatever you're most comfortable with.
Okay. I started being abused probably around the age of 7 or 8 until about the age of 12. And since Thanksgiving is here and we were talking about what everybody was going to do, holidays are not good for me. I struggle. When I was younger, at Easter, we were able to, as all the kids were allowed to have a glass of wine, with dinner. So I found myself probably around age 10 going into the kitchen and drinking excess, more than just my one glass of wine, probably 5 or 6. And that was the start of a coping mechanism for me. And just recently, probably about 8 years ago, I'm 42, I was able to stop drinking. But that was a big part of my life for a very long time, on a daily basis, dealing with the abuse that happened to me as a young girl. So,
Can I put you on the spot a little bit?
And
if you don't want to answer, tell me you don't want to answer. That's perfectly fine. Can you, just for a moment, imagine yourself the little girl at Easter who gets her allotted glass of wine, or half a glass, or however much they allowed you. So they let you have some wine, and as a little kid, I mean, that's kind of special. It's a holiday. You don't usually drink wine. It's a big deal. Do you remember thinking that drinking wine was a big deal? Do you remember being impressed by it? Do you remember thinking it's just something that you did and it didn't mean anything? I mean, what?
Well, I think I looked at it more like it made me more grown up.
Okay.
And I now that you ask me, I felt like I was
a big girl.
Being in big girl situations.
Okay.
As a young girl. My mother wasn't around a whole lot, and I was stuck with my abuser.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like an adult at a very young age. I took on sort of adult responsibilities. And so when I got that, I guess when I got that glass of wine, I thought, well, I'm an adult and I should be able to have more than what I'm having. And then when I did get more, it made things a lot easier during the holiday. It made things so much easier to deal with.
Because when you're under the influence of alcohol, and it doesn't matter the amount, because you're age and your weight and your non-resistance to alcohol at that time, more alcohol than what the adults thought was appropriate is going to loosen you up and make you feel like, yeah, I'm a big girl, I'm an adult.
Right.
I'm a grown-up, I can do this. And I think it's really neat that you phrased it that way, that it made you feel like an adult. Because the assaults that were happening to you were the types of behaviors that adults have when they're in adult relationships.
Yes.
But because the abuser was all about him?
Yes.
All about his needs. He didn't care about you. He cared about his needs. It was a power and control situation. He wanted what he wanted more than he wanted to leave you alone. He felt that his need for whatever it is that he wanted was greater than your need to be respected and left alone.
Absolutely.
So this was not an adult relationship, but you were being forced into
adult situations.
Situations.
Absolutely.
Not to sound like a TV warning before the show. And I know a lot of people, when they go to find their recovery from their addiction, whether it's alcohol, whether it's drugs, whether it's food, a lot of times they feel childish because they have to forbid themselves from having this thing that used to make them feel grown up. It's kind of like if you have a car and you're used to driving yourself around, and then all of a sudden you don't have a car, you feel like you're 14 again because you're dependent on other people and other ways to get around. And when you stop drinking, you kind of revert back a little bit because that was the thing that made you feel grown up.
Right.
Absolutely. So you said that you would sneak into the kitchen and have a little extra. Was that only at Easter? Was that only
at that house? No. It was at any of the family members' house that had alcohol. Some family members had bars in the basement, and so I would sneak down and drink liquor. And once I found out that if you had more than just a little bit, you felt better. More than a half a glass, more than two glasses, you felt pretty good.
It took away that pain and that weirdness of what you didn't like.
I found it at almost every place that I went to had alcohol. Mm-hmm. Only one place the kids were allowed to have a little glass, mm-hmm. but the adults weren't looking all the time, so I was able to sneak here and there.
Right,
when they weren't looking, I'd fill my glass up with alcohol, and nobody knew.
Right.
So.
Right. And before we have listeners who are teenagers who are listening for some kind of advice, and we've just told them how alcohol takes away that pain and makes it feel better, mm-hmm. before they think, oh, hey, that's the solution, what would you say to your 8-year-old, 10-year-old self today, knowing what you know now? What would you say to them about using alcohol to mask that pain and to feel grown up?
Oh, my. I would say that there are so many other ways to deal with that. And alcohol is it's so damaging. And first of all, at my grandparents' house, who allowed the alcohol to be served mm-hmm. to... us three children, just because it was Easter mostly.
Right.
You should never do that. You should never be giving minors alcohol, even in small quantities. And it took a really big toll on my health. And it was something that I started doing just at holidays, but after I realized the impact that it had on my how I felt, I started doing it more. I was a big drinker at age 15 until about the age of 35, and it causes a lot of problems. It causes a lot of relationship problems. It causes a lot of physical problems, and it causes a lot of mental problems. And I would caution anybody who's listening that thinks that alcohol is going to solve their problems.
And if I may be so bold, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, okay? Alcohol, drugs, food, anything that we use as an addiction, I saw a quote, George Carlin said it best. He said, accumulating possessions to make us feel better is like taping sandwiches to your body to satisfy your hunger. And I equate that to addiction, because the reason that we do things to excess, to become addicted to something, whether it's food, alcohol, or even another person, we don't feel okay in our own skin. And as children who were sexually assaulted, we accidentally learn very young that we're not okay, that we're not enough. And that's the wrong message to send to children. But children that are sexually assaulted learn the message, there's something wrong with you.
Yes.
And the more we're abused, the more we learn there's something horribly wrong with us. Now, please understand, this is wrong information, but this is how we learn it, and we think that it's us. We think that this person is doing these harmful things to us, they're touching us, they're being mean to us because of us,
Because we deserve it.
Because we deserve it. Because it's our fault.
Right.
Because if I didn't have blonde hair, or if I didn't have brown hair, or if I wasn't this tall, or if I had breasts, or if I didn't have breasts, or if I shaved my legs, or I didn't shave, whatever, as children, whatever our minds tell us makes it our fault, we find a way to make sure that we know it's our fault. And when we start addictive behaviors, we're trying to be okay again.
Absolutely.
And if I don't feel okay in my skin and I have some alcohol, I don't care that I don't feel okay in my skin anymore. And when that stops working, maybe I'll enter a sexual relationship with, you know, a friend or you know, a supposed boyfriend or whatever. And the sexual relationship, you know, it's going to feel good for a while. There's a, who is it, Mick Jagger? Rolling Stones, I Don't Get No Satisfaction. Everything has to amp up. Like you said, when you first started drinking, that kind of made you feel a little better.
Yep.
So when that wasn't enough, you drank a little more.
Right.
And that's how the addiction progresses. And people that are listening to the show, that whether you have an addiction problem and you recognize it, or you think you don't have an addiction problem and you're starting to see, wait a minute, this kind of sounds familiar, but I don't have a problem. Okay, great. If you don't have a problem, that's wonderful. But the why, and Lisa and I talked about this on our show the other day, the why you do something is the whole key to it. There are people that only drink alcohol once a year, and they're alcoholics. There are people that have alcohol every single day, and they're not alcoholics. And the difference is the why. If I come home after work, and I have a beer, and I chill with my cats, and I watch the news, and then I make dinner or whatever, not a big deal. If once a year I have to get together with my family and I know conversations are going to come up, that I have to pretend to be nice, that I have to pretend to care, that I have to pretend to be sweet, and I start drinking because I don't want to feel that. I don't want to pretend. I don't want to even be there, but I have to.
Right.
So I start drinking. And next thing you know, I'm in a blackout, or not even to that point. I'm just drinking so much that I'm obnoxious. Or some people shut down when they're that drunk. But it's the why. If you're drinking because you like the taste of beer, and you honestly can walk away from it, and you don't care, you're probably not an addict. But if you have one drink a year, and your mindset is, I need this. I have to have this to get through the next 20 minutes. That's major addiction alert. So you drank and you felt a little better.
Yes.
Did you get into drugs? And if you don't want to answer this, you're welcome to say, I don't want to answer this.
Did you
get into drugs? Did you get into relationship addiction? For me, I was a big relationship addict. I was major into relationship addiction. If I was with somebody, I was okay, because I took all their good qualities and pretended they were mine. But I wasn't okay with who I was by myself. You know?
Right.
So we got into the alcohol, but then did that progress?
When I was younger, when I was, you know, 15, 16, when I was in school, I did always have to have a boyfriend. I went from one boyfriend right to another boyfriend, and always felt like I had to have somebody with me that made me comfortable. Mm-hmm. And didn't matter who it was. It was just, if somebody broke up with me, I would find somebody within the next couple days.
Mm-hmm. Was it the same if you broke up with somebody?
It was either way. And that was just something that made me feel comfortable, made me feel whole. Mm-hmm. I had to have somebody. The question about alcohol, I progressively drank, and I always found people who drank with me. Mm-hmm. And it did lead into drugs. I'm not a very addictive, I don't have an addictive personality per se. I smoked mm-hmm. for a while, I quit smoking. And I did get into some drugs, but it was just some stints. It wasn't in anything that I fell into a major addiction. Okay. But if it was out there and I was at a party, I was always willing right. to try. You know, I wasn't scared to back off of it.
Right.
Anything that would help me escape from the way that I felt, I was willing to try to do that. Yeah.
Would you? And again, if you're not comfortable, just say I don't want to answer. I keep this easy. Would you be willing to tell everyone how you felt? You said, you know, you drank and relationships and whatever because you didn't like how you felt. If you weren't drinking and you weren't in a relationship, how did you feel?
Oh, I felt like I always felt like I needed a boyfriend because I felt like if I didn't have somebody that there was really something wrong with me, that I was broken, and that there was something wrong if I didn't have a boyfriend. And I think a lot of it was I felt like I could be protected with them. You know, they would protect me.
Right.
And of course, that never happened. I mean, they never had to save me from anybody.
Right.
But I had that in my mind.
You weren't alone and somebody was there to cover your back.
Exactly. I had somebody there.
Now, when you think collectively of the relationships you had, especially as a teenager, were they, and I'm not asking if there was violence, but were they typically abusive type relationships? Were the guys nice to you or were they kind of jerks?
I think I definitely picked the wrong kind of men.
You went for the bad boys.
I did. I went for the bad boys.
So you weren't feeling okay to just be you. And
right.
you sought relationship to help you feel better. And you picked guys that were not necessarily... And again, I'm not bashing ex-boyfriends.
No, they were
children as well. You know, they were teenagers. They were learning.
Absolutely.
But your tendency was to pick guys that weren't necessarily healthy, nice guys.
Right.
I've said in other shows and repeatedly, I always felt like if you didn't want to have sex with me, you didn't like me. And I never had female relationships. I never had female friendships because I didn't want to have sex with women. And I didn't know how to be with another person in a way that wasn't somehow sexual, romantic, flirty in nature. And, you know, when you're talking about your relationships, I can think of my own and I'm like, yeah, I didn't drink. I just went straight to... I have to be with somebody to be okay. Because people would say things like, oh, did you know Lynn's going with so-and-so? Well, he's a nice guy. He's a great guy. He's this. He's that. And I could talk about all the things he was. And as long as I could talk about all the things he was, I never actually had to become anything. And I think officially I've said in every radio show, I'm 47. I'm pretty sure I've said that in every single radio show. But I always do that to emphasize a point. I'm 47, and only in the last 4 years have I begun learning what kind of movies I like. And what kind, you're allowed to laugh out loud.
No.
Shelly's laughing like,
no,
oh my gosh.
Because I feel the same way. I feel so much, when you say things, I relate so much to that.
Yeah. When I went online and I was looking, now this was some years back, I was looking online, I was gonna look for somebody to date. I was healthy, I thought I was healthy. I went online and I was reading guys' profiles and I thought, okay, you know, he's decent looking, and I'm reading his interests and his hobbies and I'm like, wow, this sounds like a lot of fun stuff. And then I thought, I don't do any of that stuff. I've never done any of that stuff. I don't even know if I'd like any of that stuff. So I tried to write up my own profile, because at that time, you know, you can sneak and see what's available before you put your info in, because they need women in there more than men. They got tons of men. And I would write down, you know, I like blank food. And I had to think, what kind of food do I like? You know, and they give you starter questions. You know, what kind of music do you like? Do you like going to concerts? Shelly, I didn't know. I'm 44 years old and I have no idea what I like. I don't know what I like to do. I don't know what kind of music I like to listen to. Because everything that I based who I was on was the guy that I was with. And there were some guys that I was with them and I liked, for example, jazz. So, Superman, if you're ever listening to this show, you'll know I'm talking about you. This guy looked just like Clark Kent. He looked just like Superman. He liked jazz. So I liked jazz. So I bought concert tickets, and we went and saw Kenny G. And to this day, I'm like, jazz is kind of boring. No offense to people who like jazz. I don't really like jazz. But when I was with him, I liked it. It was the only station I listened to was jazz. We went to a concert. The guy that was on first, I couldn't stand him. Kenny G that was on, I thought he was good. I actually liked him. When we were leaving, my friend says, Superman said to me, you know, Kenny G really sucks, but that first guy was great. And I was like, I guess I don't like jazz. But I wasn't going to tell him that because I was dating him. So I said, you're right. You know, I had no opinion
really
of
relate.
My own.
I can really relate to that.
And for men out there, and this goes for women too, but for men out there who say, I hate asking a girl what she wants to do, and she smiles politely, bats her eyes, flashes her boobs, and says, I don't know, what do you want to do? Guys, we have, that kind of woman is someone who has probably spent her life from one relationship to the next trying to figure out who she's allowed to be. You know, because when I was growing up, I was told who I was.
Absolutely.
I was told what I was supposed to put up with. I was told I had to endure. I was told that when you're an adult, you don't always get to do things you like. So I spent Christmas morning with a man who had raped me, and his wife gave me a baby doll nightie and panties. And I was absolutely horrified. And I was told that I was unappreciative of the gift. Now, she didn't know what he had done to me, so it wasn't her fault. But I remember thinking, it's not fair that somebody did something mean to me and hurt me, and I'm told, too bad, put up with it.
Right.
Now, you said that family members had alcohol at different locations. They have a bar that you'd sneak down to in the lower level. Were there people that knew what was happening to you that you knew 100% they knew, or were there people you suspected knew what was going on, the abuse that you were enduring?
My mother knew.
You knew she knew?
I knew she knew.
Okay.
Yes.
And again, if you don't want to answer, tell me you don't want to answer. What was her opinion of what should be done?
Well, she didn't come out at that time and tell me that she knew.
Okay.
It was a secret.
Okay.
And it was a secret that she knew from me.
Okay.
But my abuser did things right in front of her. Okay. And it was like her eyes were wide shut.
Okay.
To that situation.
Okay. She didn't know what to do, so she didn't see it.
Either she
didn't, or she didn't want to have to do something.
She didn't want to have to do anything. My mother was a person who worked full time.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the evening, she filled her time with school.
Mm-hmm.
She had several associate degrees.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think she's got a bachelor's degree, but she has maybe four associate degrees because she didn't want to be there at the house with him. She needed his income, mm-hmm. which was my stepfather. But she didn't want to be there with him. So I guess she was going to school. I mean, she's got the degrees.
Right.
And she told me, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago when we discussed this, and she admitted to me that she knew. And she said, well, I tried to take you to your grandparents, and I tried to take you over to your dad's house. Don't you remember that? And I thought, I told her no. And then I thought, oh, my gosh, why, if she knew, how could she leave me? You know, how could she go and be bettering herself?
Right. How could you walk away from a child when you know that child's going to be abused when you leave?
And also, she would say, well, I'm going to school for us, so you and I can have a better life. And I thought, I mean, that's a real big kick in the butt to say to somebody who's taking your place at home while you're going out and doing whatever you want to do.
Right.
And leaving your little girl to the wolf. I mean, leaving her there to whatever. I mean, she didn't know. I mean, she didn't know exactly what he was doing to me, but she knew he was doing something.
Right. Right.
So, I find it very hard to be around her now. It's something that I don't think I can forgive. Maybe I can forgive it, but I can't ever forget it. And it's hard. It's hard to have communication with her now.
Yeah. Well, and I went through a lot of it as well. There's a lot that we expected our moms, our parents to do for us, and they let us down. And, you know, at 47, I have options. At 30, I have options. At 3 years old, at 7 years old, I don't have a lot of options. In fact, pretty much until you're 16 and arrogant enough to run away, you don't have options. And again, I'm not saying that people should run away. But I will say, if you're being sexually assaulted, if you're being abused, if you're being emotionally abused, tell someone.
Absolutely.
Because you don't deserve that. And it shouldn't be happening.
So many resources now that weren't available to you and I.
Right.
Because it was so long ago. But there are so many resources.
Right.
You know, I couldn't have told my mother. I mean, even though I knew she knew, I couldn't have told her because I would have gotten into trouble.
Right.
But now you can call 911.
Right.
And go straight to the police.
Right.
And I
do encourage people. I tell people, if you tell and nothing happens, tell someone else. And if nothing happens, tell someone else. And keep telling until something happens. I mean, if a 5-year-old child is in a house and they see flames going up a wall and they tell an adult, hey, that room's on fire, and the adult says, yeah, I know, it's all right, it doesn't make it all right. Things are going to keep getting worse. And it's easy to look back and say, well, of course I should have told. But when we don't know that we have the option of having a better life, we don't know to tell. Todd and I talked about that a little bit the other day. When someone's doing something to you, instinctively you don't like it, you don't want it to happen.
Right.
But you're a child and you don't know any better. It's kind of like if somebody fed you pickles for breakfast every day of your life, from birth on up to 10 years old, and you just thought that's how it was supposed to be. And one day you turn 11 years old and somebody hands you an English muffin for breakfast. That's bizarre. You mean all those years I didn't have to have pickles for breakfast? And I know that's an extreme scenario, but when you're a child and somebody does something to you, unless someone else intervenes and tells you that it's not supposed to be that way, you don't know it's not supposed to be that way.
Right.
You said that you stopped drinking, and you said that you've had some different life changes. What would you like to share around the time that you stopped drinking, or why you stopped drinking, or how you stopped drinking, or anything in that time frame?
Well, I chose to stop drinking because of what happened to me as a child, and I hope this isn't the same for a lot of other people who have been abused as children. It's caused me to have a lot of physical problems as an adult. And because of that, I take some medications, and I can't drink on those medications, which turned out to be a blessing.
Right.
You can drink on them, but
you'll get sick something.
You're not supposed to. And so I stopped at the drinking, and oh my gosh, I felt so much better. It just was like a weight lifted off my shoulder to not feel the need to have to have a couple beers. I wasn't like a hardcore drinker where I had a case every night or a 12-pack. You know, sometimes I would only just have a couple.
Right.
But, to have even that couple, not me having to consume those at night, was a big deal because it's so hard on your body. That was a big change. And the medications I have, they've really helped me. But one thing I want to say, if anybody's listening who has gone through what we've gone through, is there's so much help out there. And, you know, like Lynn said, you can always call Stop Feeding the Predators. And you need to do that for yourself and start the healing as soon as possible, because if you don't, it's like a cancer and it will eat at you and eat at you, and it can really cause more problems down the road if you don't address it. As long as you've come to terms with what has happened, you need to address it and start the healing process. And no group can heal you. You have to heal yourself and go through the process. But there are groups out there. There are different ways to start that process. And Stop Feeding the Predators is a good start. And it was an excellent start for me. So
thank you. Way to promote us. That's awesome.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's the groups are hard to find. So the people that run them are exceptionally special. They devote a lot of their time. I know Lynn, that runs this program, has been through the same situations as the ladies and gentlemen that come to the program. And that's very comforting for me. And I think for other people that come. So I just think people that can start their healing as soon as possible, they will see such a big change in their life. If I would have gotten help at a younger age, I most likely would have stopped drinking a long, long, long time ago.
Do you think that you would have still had the kinds of relationships that you did if you had gotten help earlier?
No, they would have been different. I think I already mentioned that I'm 42. I haven't been out on a date for 9 years. Not one date.
Now, just to clarify, you have been in restaurants. You have eaten with people in public.
Yes, I've been out, but not with a man.
You haven't dated.
Right, I haven't been out on a date with a man.
Right.
As a prospective
relationship.
Right.
I don't want people listening and going like, oh my gosh, she's a shut-in. No. Shelly leaves her house. She goes out and has dinner.
Yes, I have friends, and I'm very lucky. I have a great support system. But, if I would have sought help sooner, things would have definitely been, it would have been a game changer for me.
So you're saying, and I'm putting words in your mouth.
Yeah.
But I'll put words in your mouth and you tell me if they're wrong. So you're saying at 7 or 8 years old, when the abuse started, if you had told and told and told and continued telling until somebody intervened, you're saying that your life would have been different?
I'm not going back that far. I was in a situation where I couldn't have told anybody back then. It's not like that now, so you absolutely can tell. I'm talking more like when I was 20.
Okay.
If I would have dealt with what was going on, just dealt with it.
Right.
Just seeked out.
Admitted out loud to your own self what had happened.
And seeked out people that was in the same situation.
Right.
Just had somebody that sat across from me and said, oh my gosh, I know what you've been through. And they were sincere.
Right.
Because I have had a couple friends that I've confided in,
mm-hmm.
and it hadn't happened to them. And they, they didn't know what to say back. But when I confided into you, my gosh, I think we talked for like an hour and a half.
Yeah.
And, I planned on just talking to you for like 10 minutes to find out about the meeting.
Yeah, poor Shelly called to confirm the meeting and got stuck on the phone with Lynn for an hour and a half.
And it was a wonderful conversation. I felt so different. That was where my healing started. It started at that phone call. It started immediately, and I can't stress that enough. If you want to seek help, just try it one time, and if it doesn't work for you, then it doesn't work for you. But it will. It will change. It will really help you, and I just can't even stress it enough. To please, if you need help, just reach out just once and talk to somebody that's been through it, because it will change. It will change the way you feel if you just do it once.
And to clarify for people that are listening that haven't been to a Stop Feeding the Predator meeting, when Shelly is saying try it once, what she's suggesting, and again, Shelly will tell you if I'm wrong, is finding somebody that you're comfortable talking to.
Absolutely.
About what you've been through.
Yes.
And for some people, that might be a blocked phone number, and they call Stop Feeding the Predators.
Absolutely.
And I answer all calls. We have, various people that answer the phone, but we answer all calls. If we can't answer the calls, you can leave a message. If you don't want to leave a phone number, or if you don't want to leave a message, you can hang up and you can keep calling back until we do answer. Because sometimes it's a matter of, we may be in the middle of a meeting or something and we can't answer right then, but maybe 6 minutes later we can answer.
Right.
So I tell people, I don't care if you call the phone number 15 times. Because maybe I'm not available those 15 times. But maybe the 16th time you call, maybe I'm available and I can answer it. I'm not going to get mad that you've called and called and called and haven't left messages. I'm even okay with people calling and saying, I don't know what to say. And that's okay. Sometimes it's okay to make a phone call and say, I don't know what to say, and just be quiet for a minute. And that's okay. Because saying out loud, somebody hurt me when I was little and I'm still not okay, That's a big thing to do. That's a big thing to say.
It's huge.
And I've given my elevator speech, as it's called in the business marketing world. That you have to have the elevator speech, which is where you've got the elevator ride length of time to convey your business message and make a business contact. You know, and I say, I was sexually assaulted when I was raped when I was 3 and sexually assaulted throughout my childhood. And after 11 years of marriage to a summa cum laude college graduate, I discovered that he had been raping my kids. And you know what's funny is you would think people would stand there with their mouths open, totally appalled that I have just said this out loud. But more times than I can count, the response has been, me too. And there's something in the fact that I just, in again, elevator speech, I just said a horrible thing that happened to me, and it made it okay for that other person to say, me too.
Right.
Because they knew I wasn't going to judge them.
Absolutely.
They knew I wasn't going to criticize them. I wasn't going to ask them why. I wasn't going to ask them why they didn't tell. I wasn't going to make it their fault. I wasn't going to add to the guilt and shame that they already had. Many times when I tell people that, I have had a lot of people take me aside later. Maybe the moment wasn't right. I'm okay to stand in front of a crowd of people and say, hey, I was raped when I was 3. How's everybody else doing today? But not everybody's like that. And I've had people take me aside between meetings, between conferences. Did a couple presentations along the East Coast and Battle of the Christian Bands. And I can't tell you how many people would pull me aside in the hallway or politely, not in a creepy way, politely follow me to the restroom and say, hey, I need to tell you something. And I feel so honored that people trust me to tell me something so horrible. And they don't give graphic details, you know, usually it's
right.
You know,
yeah,
someone hurt me or whatever. But to be able to say what happened to me out loud, I don't care who knows. Hello world, I'm Lynn Wellman McLean, pick a name, I don't care. I was raped when I was a kid and it wasn't my fault. That makes it okay for somebody else to go, me too.
Absolutely. It's a big deal. It's a big deal to have somebody tell you that they have. It's so much easier for the person that has never told somebody to come out and say it to somebody who's been through it.
Yeah, and it makes it easier for the person who has been trying to tell people what happened.
Sure.
Because they finally found somebody who understands why they couldn't phrase it differently, why they couldn't tell sooner, why they...
Right.
There's a million whys. But... So when you stopped drinking and you started meds for the physical ailments,
right,
and things like that, what would you say? Now, you, how long has it been?
Since I stopped drinking.
Mm-hmm.
About 7 years.
Okay. What would you say is the biggest difference in your life since then? And again, it's not just that you stopped taking alcohol. It's that you also started taking medicine to,
right,
you know, appropriately treat physical...
Well, I think the biggest thing is my mind is not clouded all the time from the alcohol, because it just really builds up in your system. And it took months and months and months for me to detox and get that all out of my system. So I think a lot clearer now.
Mm-hmm.
I handle situations a lot differently than I handled them when I was drinking.
Are you trying to indicate that you were a lot more fun when you were drinking in your responses to situations?
I think I was a lot more fun when I was in my early 20s drinking.
Uh-huh.
But as I'd say 5 years before I stopped drinking, I became a very mean person. And I was losing friends. They didn't want to go out and drink with me anymore. I had to start going out and drinking alone, and I didn't really get it until somebody told me. They just came up and said, you're a mean drunk. And I thought, oh my God, I didn't realize I was being so mean. And so, yeah, when I stopped drinking, I gained a lot of friends back that I had lost by being mean when I was drinking. And it wasn't really me. And, you know, I had lost myself in the alcohol.
So for listeners who are plotting out the timeline, she started drinking because she wanted to feel okay in her skin. And she stopped drinking because that wasn't working, and she felt worse, and other people said, you're not okay in your skin.
That's right. That's absolutely right. They wanted to know where the fun Shelly went. She was gone, and mean Shelly was coming to get you. I think was a lot of times when I'd walk into a bar that, you know, I frequented, they thought, oh, God, here comes mean Shelly. Let's drink our drink and get out of here.
Did it help if you drank more, or did that just make you...
It made it worse.
More bitter?
Yeah, it did.
I know there's happy drunks and mean drunks.
And I used to be, you know, in the beginning when I first started.
So you were a happy drunk.
I was at one time.
And what do you think...
I think when I was in my early 30s is when I came to grips with everything that had happened when I was young.
Okay.
And really, you know, in my 20s, I blocked everything out, and I never thought of what happened when I was a child. I just didn't even think about it.
So in your 20s, you were drunk and fun and didn't deal
right.
with it.
That's right. And when I hit 30, I started thinking about it all the time, and then I would drink, and it was totally different me. I was drinking for another reason, I think. I think I began drinking more because the pain was more, because I was dealing with...
You were feeling it.
Yeah.
Because you were remembering it and you were thinking about it.
I was remembering details that I had never thought about before.
Right.
And that was very troubling for me.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And then when I drank, it was... You know, it came out because I was so unhappy at that time.
Right. And hopefully people listening understand that when you do something, whether it's alcohol, drugs, food, relationships, when you do something to try to make yourself feel okay, you're just delaying it. Go back to the scenario of the five-year-old seeing the flames up the wall, and, you know, they go in the other room and tell an adult, hey, that room's on fire, and the adult says, yeah, it's okay, don't worry about it, I know, it's fine, it's in there, it's not going to happen out here, it's, you know, don't worry about it. And whether you tell or you don't, it's going to keep getting worse until somebody does something about it. And eventually, if you tell enough people, somebody somewhere is going to say, oh my gosh, that room's on fire.
Right.
And in typical little kid fashion, we usually go, I've been telling you that forever. So I know there are some people listening who may not know if they were sexually assaulted when they were a child because they've blocked it out. And if I may offer advice, if you have odd thoughts that something wasn't quite right, even if you don't know details, seek healing for that. Because you don't have to know that when you were, you know, a year old, you were in a bad car wreck, you know, and later everything was fine. If you're still feeling some kind of emotional turmoil and you can't define it, that emotional turmoil needs healing. Shelly, you said that you have felt better recently. You indicated that Stop Feeding the Predators has been helpful, and I appreciate the promo. Awesome. Thank you. I wish we could pay you for advertising.
You have. You have paid me. You've made me feel so much better, and no amount of money can to compensate for that. So,
good.
I thank you so much.
Good. And again, for people who are listening and don't know, Stop Feeding the Predators is nonprofit. if people want to make a donation, we are not going to turn them down. But if somebody says, gosh, you know, I can give you $5. You know what? How about you keep your $5 and how about you tell one person about us? Because even if they were never sexually assaulted, they may know someone who was. And if you're local and you can come to one of the meetings, wonderful. If you're out of town, and again, I don't really care where you are. If your phone will dial my phone, or if you can send me a Facebook message, that's close enough. If we can work out, you know, Stop Feeding the Predators coming and giving presentations or talking with people to help them learn how to find their healing, great. We don't charge anything for it. I tell people, if I had $100,000 right now, this very second, absolutely nothing about Stop Feeding the Predators would change. But if three more people showed up to a presentation, or one more person showed up to support group, or two more people talked a little bit longer, you know, when I gave my elevator speech, that's where the healing starts. Stop Feeding the Predators is not about money. It's about me. It's about me, Shelley. When I was three, somebody hurt me.
That's right.
And I wasn't okay with that. And I didn't tell anybody because I didn't know I was allowed to tell. Then when I was older, somebody else hurt me. I didn't like that either. I still didn't know I was allowed to tell. And when I found out my daughter was being raped, I didn't have any coping skills to protect her. And that's a horrible feeling as a mom when you want to protect your child and you don't have any resources and you don't know who to talk to. And, you know, the teachers at my daughter's school were less than supportive. Nobody wants to talk about sexual assault. It's that horrible thing. And until people are willing to talk about sexual assault and understand, it's not something that I did wrong. At 3 years old, I was cute, but I was not sexy.
You know, and even if you haven't been sexually assaulted and you're a mother and you think something might be happening to your child or something has happened, call. Call here and talk to Lynn, because she's got great advice. She can tell you how you can get different resources. There's all kinds of help out there for you. And your children deserve it. And you deserve it. You deserve to get that help for your children. So please, please, if you think something is going on, get some answers and get some help.
And the biggest thing is, you're not the only one who's a good mom who found out that your child was being sexually assaulted. It doesn't make you a bad mom to find out your child's being sexually assaulted. And it doesn't make you a bad mom to not know what to do.
Absolutely not.
The quote-unquote bad mom factor comes in when you refuse to address the issue.
Absolutely.
When you close the door on that burning room and say, it's not in this room, I don't have to deal with it right now. Because you're the parent, you're the mom, and you do have to deal with it right now. And I don't care if you're on your way to work or on your way to school, when you're the mom, it's on you.
That's right.
Or if you're the dad, it's on you. I mean, there are moms that abuse their children.
Sure.
And it may be a grandparent, it may be a teacher, it may be a father that comes through at the last minute. We only have a little bit of time left, and I know you're happy because all the pressure's off. You don't have to think about, oh my gosh, what's Lynn going to ask me now? What parting words would you leave for people that are listening today?
Well, I would just say, please don't wait. Don't wait a minute longer if you need to make that phone call. Or if you need to get online and look wherever you live in the United States, if you need to find a support group, please do it. Because I just can't believe how much it's changed my life in the last month. I feel like a different person, and I know it's only going to get better for me. And I want that for anybody who has been where I am. You deserve it. And I want you to be happy. And you deserve to be happy. You shouldn't be feeling that it's your fault. You shouldn't be feeling that you don't deserve a chance, because you absolutely do. So please find a group. Please find somebody to talk to. Call here. Call in. And you're special, and you deserve it. Sorry.
You're wonderful. You're wonderful. That's great. Thank you. So you have been listening to Shelley, the guest, and Lynn on Stop Feeding the Predators on City of Angels Recovery Radio. Our phone number is linked either with Facebook or City of Angels, but just type in Stop Feeding the Predators. And I'd like to remind everyone that healing starts here.